Welcome to the Campbell Conversations. My guest today is Rosalind Barnett. She's a senior scientist at Brandeis University's Women's Studies Research Center and the co-author, with Carol Rivers, of The New Soft War on Women, How the Myth of Female Ascendance is Hurting Women, Men, and Our Economy. Dr. Barnett, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
Well, let's start with the book's title. You've got this phrase, The Myth of Female Ascendance. Before we debunk the myth, let's start with what is that myth?
Okay. Well, the myth is that women have broken through the glass ceiling, that all the battles have been fought, that women now have a bright future, the sky's the limit, and that the problems are all in the past. And that is a big story in the media. It's fueled every now and then by some wonderful advance that some woman has made. And the kind of myth around that is that, well, if one woman has made it, like the new president of GM, for example, then it's better for everybody. And that has fueled a whole lot of problematic consequences, including the fact that if other women, you know, most women, average women, think that the battles have all been fought, but they're not making any progress, then they end up concluding that it's their fault. Mm-hmm. It must be something they haven't done. Maybe they need another course. Maybe they need some more time on the job. And they skip over the fact that there's still a systematic bias against women. Sometimes it's subtle. It's much less subtle, more subtle than it was before. But nevertheless, there are systemic problems that have not yet been addressed. So that women are, when they start to think it's all there on their shoulders, they lose the oomph, the fight, you know, the tendency to get together and do what they can as a group to make things better for themselves.
And you anticipated the other thing I wanted to ask you related to that in talking about the example of the CEO of GM. I was curious to know whether there are any current realities or trend lines that fuel that myth. It sounds like in part it's kind of a great women of history problem, or I was thinking of the often reported statistic about women in college now, more women than men.
Yeah, so that's repeated over and over. If you take a hard look at that figure, two or three things to say about it. If you look only at college enrollments among the traditional college-age students, then you find that it's not 60% anymore. It's 51% to 49%. Mm. What I mean by that is that a large number of women, older women, and women of color are adding to the ranks of women, but they're not the women that the picture of you get in, when you talk about, you know, 60% of college seats are occupied by women. It's not really true. A lot of these are non-traditional women. So it's a little bit false. But that's another story that seems to keep getting repeated over and over without taking a harder look at really who are these women that constitute the 60%. And it's also true that when you have 60% of women, it doesn't mean that women are distributed that way across all majors or all fields of concentration. So there's still a very important sex segregation among college students and what they're taking and what they're preparing themselves for after college.
Well, say a bit more about that. I think we probably have some ideas about where those are, but it's important to get that out there.
Well, women are very underrepresented in what we call STEM fields, science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. They're overrepresented in things like education and social sciences. There's nothing wrong with that, but in terms of the future, the high-paying jobs of the future are in these STEM fields. Not exclusively, of course, but women are very underrepresented in these fields, and that is a problem. So women are segregating themselves out of certain areas of education, and they then put themselves at a disadvantage in the marketplace of the future.
Okay, so now that we've got that, let's turn to now the basic facts of reality that dispel that myth. I assume that's where the soft war part of it in your title comes into play. What is the actual situation for women?
Well, no matter where you look, I'll give you a few examples. They're all connected, of course. But when you look across occupations, it's true that men are now moving more than they have before into women's occupations. So you have more male nurses, more male teachers, social workers, and so forth. However, in every occupation, whether it's female-dominated or not, when the men are in those fields, they make more money than women, and often significantly more. So no one goes out intentionally to pay women less, but it's part of the sort of the sex stereotyping of our culture that men are seen to be more driven, more ambitious, have more leadership qualities, and they end up getting a premium in terms of their salaries. And this is true across the board. even when you have, let's say, men and women graduating from MBA programs, so they're a select group of people, just fresh out of school, their starting salaries, women on average make $4,500 or $4,600 a year less than men, and that difference grows over time. So by the time you get up to the top of the corporate ladder, the differences are remarkable. In fact, over the lifetime of work time, women are on average going to earn about $700,000 less than men with the same degree.
Now, that was pay that you focused in on, and I'm sure this is related to it, but what about achieving different positions in the hierarchy and moving up in terms of positions and not just in terms of what, say, an MBA coming out would be getting paid?
Sure. There's no end of studies that shows that the percentage of women on corporate boards has been either flat or declining over the last several years. In fact, Eileen Lang, who was president of Catalyst, which is a major research and advocacy group, has said that if you looked at those trend lines and that you're talking about a patient, that patient would be dead. There's no growth. In fact, there's a lot of concern about, you know, where are all the women? There was an article in the last, so I don't know, 6 or 8 months in the headlines about Twitter, which is a lot of the customers of that organization are female. There's not one woman on the board. And this is true of a lot of tech companies. And in general, the women's female representation on corporate boards and in high-level C-suite positions is very low and not improving. And this is not a question of talent. We find that in other countries, women have are making much better progress than they are here. So something else is going on in the United States.
What are some of the countries where the progress has been much better?
Well, you can almost name it. If you look at the Western European countries, part of the improvement there has been due to the fact that there's quotas in place. So in England or in France and Scandinavian countries, it's now required that women be X percent of corporate seats have been held by women. And that's obviously made a big difference. In fact, in France, that ruling, I believe it went into effect in 2010, might have been 2011. But by virtue of having that in place, the goals that they were supposed to achieve, they were achieving them ahead of time. So when people realize, oh, my gosh, you know, look at us. We haven't been doing our thing here. And now that we have to pay attention, all of a sudden they find these women who are capable of taking on these positions. In Australia, a very interesting case, they took a different tact. They found out that, based on the research, that companies where there's a higher percentage of women in corporate senior corporate positions, those companies do better and in terms of their bottom line. So the argument now is no longer about fairness and equity, you know, doing the right thing. Rather, it's saying that we're making the business case for including more women in senior positions. And they have that. In fact, now, their equivalent of the stock exchange, the companies on that exchange have to report the number of women, or percent rather, of women on their boards. The idea being that investors are going to want to invest in companies where there's a better gender distribution because those are companies that tend to have better performance. So in a lot of different countries are taking different approaches to trying to right this gender inequity.
I'm Grant Reher, and I'm speaking with Rosalind Barnett, a researcher at Brandeis University and the co-author of The New Soft War on Women, How the Myth of Female Ascendance is Hurting Women, Men, and Our Economy. Well, you make the claim, it's right in your title, that this myth is hurting not only women, but also men and our general economy. I wanted to hear a little bit more about that because it seems to me that having the myth of power, the appearance of power, can often help people actually to gain more power. So how is the myth as a myth hurting things?
Well, I think your premise is right, but it doesn't work for women. There have been studies that show that women think that they have done all. You know, the glass ceiling isn't broken, as I said before. They tend to lose their feminism. They tend not to be advocating for themselves, thinking that it's all over. So that's a problem. Now, in terms of men, since most couples now, most men, people are married, and most couples are dual-earner couples, if a wife in the family is not earning what she should be earning, given her talent and her experience, that's obviously going to affect the bottom line for couples. So it becomes an issue for men as well as women to make sure that their spouses are being treated fairly in the workplace. And as I mentioned before, that there's a stream of evidence to show that companies, performance of companies does better when there are more women sitting in these important positions. So when women aren't promoted, when they aren't given opportunities to show what they can do and to contribute, the whole company is going to suffer.
And I was also curious to know how your book fits in with Sheryl Sandberg's Lean In, which has gotten a lot of attention. Is she, in a part, advancing the myth that you're trying to bust?
Well, let's see. That's a good question. Sheryl Sandberg is a very special person, and she wrote a very interesting book. Now, our book is different in that we're not. It's not a book about, you know, look at what I've done in my life. This is a book that's based in solid social science research, but written in a very accessible journalistic voice with a lot of interviews that we did in writing the book. So it applies to a more general sort of cut through the population. Not everybody can do what Sheryl Sandberg could do. You know, she is a CEO of Facebook, and she's just in a special position. It's important that she raised this issue that women can be managers, they can be leaders. It's important to recognize that. But it's not clear that her experience is going to be applicable generally to other women.
And you've got a very interesting chapter in your book titled The Glass Cliff and the Glass Escalator. Mm-hmm. We've all heard of the glass ceiling, so what's the glass cliff and the glass escalator?
Okay, let's start with the glass cliff. There's been some studies that show that women are often promoted to high-level positions when the company that we're talking about is in trouble. Mm. So the idea being, well, we're in trouble, so what the heck, let's give it to a woman and see what she can do. So women get into these positions when the company's already on a slide down. And then if the company does, in fact, go down, then people say, put a woman in charge and we have all kinds of problems. So that's the glass cliff. It's a precarious position for women who come into situations like that. And there are examples in our book about women who have been in that situation. Now, the glass escalator is a very different kind of phenomenon. I mentioned earlier that men are increasingly moving into female-dominated occupations. But what happens? When men come into a field like, say, nursing, just for example, they tend to be promoted much more quickly than women. They get promoted right to the top, so they become the director or the supervisor. And that we call the glass escalator. And it's interesting that the people who are doing the promoting tend to be women. So women in these senior positions are more likely to promote men, particularly white men, than they are to promote women. So men get an easier time. Whereas when women go into male-dominated occupations, they're tokens and they get much more scrutiny and have a much harder time making any kind of progress. For men, it's quite the opposite.
My guest is Rosalind Barnett. She's a senior scientist at the Women's Studies Research Center at Brandeis University and the co-author of The New Soft War on Women, How the Myth of Female Ascendance is Hurting Women, Men, and Our Economy. You mentioned earlier some countries that did better on this than the United States. Are there particular companies that deal with gender equality issues particularly well, or are there types of companies that do this particularly well?
Oh, that's a good question. I really don't think I can answer that directly, not because it's not a good question, but I just don't know. I just know more generally that in our country, not just in our country, but a lot of companies will have on their books gender equity policies. Policies are designed to give women a chance, you know, a better chance. But in this country, there's little commitment to those policies, especially in upper management positions. So it's like saying, well, I've done this bit for women, and check that box off. I've got this policy and that policy, whether it's flexible work arrangements or child care benefits. But there's no push behind it. So women really aren't getting the advantage that these policies might otherwise give them. In fact, there's a fair bit of research that shows that if women do take advantage of some of these policies, that they lose out in terms of salary and promotions. They're kind of penalized for taking up these policies. So it's like, you know, saying, well, we have flexibility on our books, but usable flexibility, well, that's a different story. Try to use it and you're going to be dinged.
And I know that, or I think I know that, the federal government is known for having a more diverse workforce,
right,
and upper management echelons relative to the corporate sector. Does it do a better job as an employer than many other companies when it comes to gender equality? And if so, what would you attribute it to?
Well, one of the things, I think the answer to the first part is yes, they do better. And one of the reasons is that the pay and grade levels are public. Hmm. So let's say you're a GS-7. You know what GS-7s make. And you know what they make in terms of the tenure on the job. So you as a woman are in a much better position to say to your boss, hey, you know, Joe over there, he's also a GS-7. And he and I have been working here the same length of time, but I'm not making what he's making, according to the data. So they have a much stronger case to make. That information, by and large, is not public in the private center, in the private sector. So women are much disadvantaged. They don't know what men in a comparable position are likely to be making.
In case you've just joined us, you're listening to the Campbell Conversations, and I'm talking with Brandeis University gender researcher Rosalind Barnett. I wanted to come back to the myth problem again. I get the sense from conversations with my college students that they think this war has pretty much been won. They don't see it as a big issue. Is that your sense for younger women and for girls?
I think it's true. I think that's one of the reasons why, you know, sort of feminism sort of doesn't have any oomph behind it anymore. And that's part of that's this myth. Because when you peel off the top of that story, you find that women, for example, the Equal Pay Act, the first Equal Pay Act, was passed 50 years ago, 1963. Women are still earning on average 77 cents per dollar. There's been almost no change at all. Now, sure, in certain areas you find some change, but overall the picture is very stagnant. So this myth, it sort of defangs motivation. But indeed, there's very little progress. If you take, no matter where you look, you find you may find women, more women in entry-level positions in the profession, say. But when you move up the ladder, they're very, very, very few and far between. Now, where have women made the biggest progress? Well, certainly they've made a very big strides in the academy. More than half of degrees earned, bachelor's, master's, PhD, and professional level degrees are now earned by women, which is a remarkable change. But when you get into the workplace, those degrees do not translate into opportunities the way they do for men. And that is a real problem.
I also understand that you have a clinical psychology practice. And through that experience, have you seen a change over the years in the way that women think about and struggle with this problem?
Sure. You know, that it's very frustrating when you don't know what else you can do. And it makes people very angry and makes them just very discouraged. But again, it's partly when they take it as a personal situation. If they can sort of be helped by a book like this, they say, wait a minute, the things that the company is doing, it's not my fault. You know, that can be rectified. That will make it easier for me. Then it's that's more motivating and mobilizing. And there are indeed things that, in fact, no woman can do it on their own. The Lean In book you mentioned earlier, that can only go so far. You know, women can't do this on their own. They need support from the corporations, and we need federal policies. We're one of the few countries that has no paid child maternity leave, no paid child care, we have no systems to help women. In fact, it's sort of a miracle that women are doing as well as they're doing, given the dearth of policy support that we have here.
Yeah, I had former Governor Madeleine Kuhnen on the program several weeks ago, and she was talking about some of those policies. I wanted to actually ask you about a different part of your book, not so much about policy, but specific advice for women in the workplace. Your book has some of that. It has some specific advice for women in the workplace who are trying to win this new soft war. What are the most important pieces of that advice?
Well, we say in the book that it's a three-pronged approach. One is what individuals can do, which is your question, and I'll get to it. The second is, you know, identifying things that can be done in the company. Mm. And the third is advocating for national policy changes. Well, let's look at the individual. For example, the male stereotype, which we all know about, is what's that about? He's a leader. He's competent. He's assertive. He's rational. He's got all this leadership potential. But the female stereotype, in contrast, is quite negative. It's someone who's emotional, is irrational, not very competent, very passive. So women have to confront that stereotype, or else they're going to be defined by it. So one of the things we say is, don't let yourself, you know, be boxed in by the stereotype. And concretely, what does that mean? It means if you're coming to give a talk or to into a new environment, have someone introduce you. Put your credentials out there. You know, don't just say, you know, I'm Jane Smith and whatever. Say that, you know, I'm Jane Smith and just I got my degree from Oxford University and I have just published these five papers. Present your credentials up front. Now, some women have a hard time with that, but I think that's just a question of practice and being able to talk about yourself so that and there's some empirical evidence. It's quite remarkable how men and women will change their perception of women based on some of this preliminary biographical information. So that's one thing women can do. And of course, it makes it harder. You know, men don't have to go to do this extra bit of work. And the same is going to be true for the next thing I mentioned. Let's just say that you're in a work environment and there's something that goes on and you get angry. Well, if a man gets angry, he's seen as a strong leader. He's taking charge. He's got it figured out. But if a woman gets angry, she's emotional. She's out of control. It's all about her. So what can be done about that? Well, women who can explain their anger, say, well, you know, I didn't get this report on time. It was due and it was late. Somehow make it understandable. Then that stereotype that she's out of control and irrational will dissipate. So women have to be aware of how they're likely to be perceived and to undo it.
Well, let me get to the three questions at the end. First, what's the title of the chapter of life you're currently living?
Bigger Challenges. I've been writing this. I've written many, many books, and now I'm thinking to the next one, and it's going to be a larger project than I've taken on before. I think these earlier books have prepared me for what I'm about to undertake.
Normally, I don't follow up on these questions, but now you've got me curious. Tell me just a little bit about that project.
Okay, well, just a little teaser. I'm interested in exploring the cultural and social implications of the fact that as a society, we're living a lot longer. So the prediction right now is that 50%, one out of every two babies born in developed countries, will live to 100. And the other piece of that is that the birth rate is declining in industrialized countries. So if you put those two things together, it has big implications that I want to explore in this book for everything, for education, for workplace, for marriage and family formation. So that's a teaser.
Well, back to the three questions. It sounds interesting. What's your worst trait?
I'm impatient. I'm working on it, but I tend to be impatient. And I don't think it's altogether terrible, but it certainly isn't something that I'm universally happy with.
And finally, what professional or creative achievement in your life so far has surprised you the most?
Well, I've been always intrigued with the disconnection or disparity between what we have in our country, so stereotyped ideas about gender, and what the empirical research says. And what surprised me is how consistently the stereotypes are wrong. It's really quite remarkable. So that's been, it continues to interest me because in spite of all the data that's been collected, the myths keep going. You know, it's still thought to be the case that, you know, women are less assertive and they're more caring and they're more nurturing when there are no data to support any of that stuff. And I find that very intriguing.
That was Rosalind Barnett. Her new book is The New Soft War on Women, How the Myth of Female Ascendance is Hurting Women, Men, and Our Economy. Rosalind, thanks so much for talking with me.
Well, thank you for having me.
I'm Grant Reher. Join me again next week on WRVO Public Media for more conversation in the public interest. You can also follow us on Twitter at Campbell Convos.
The Campbell Conversations, Conversations in the Public Interest, was hosted and produced by Grant Reher, engineered by Tom Fazio, and edited by Jason Smith. Research assistance was provided by Brooke Weinstein, Eric Lyons, and Alexandra Curtis. The Campbell Conversations is a joint production of the Campbell Public Affairs Institute at Syracuse University and WRVO Public Media. Visit wrvo.org/Campbell Conversations for more information.